Let me give you another simple example of this. I was doing a seminar one time, and I was telling the audience basically what I've shared with you, that the bottom line in life is that if you're not doing something, it's because you associate more pain to doing it than not doing it. Now, I had a woman who raised her hand and said, look, there's an exception to that. She says, for example, my husband and I, we'd like to get together and spend more time, but we just don't. I said, well, why don't you? She goes, well, we just can't. I said, you mean you aren't committed to? And she said, no, you know, well, I guess you're right. We aren't 100%. I said, if you were 100% committed, could you find a way to spend time together? She said, well, of course. I said, then why don't you? She goes, well, I guess because we're not committed. I said, why not? And boy, that opened up something. She said, well, I don't know. I just, you know, I love my husband, but I can't commit 100% to him. I said, really? Well, let me ask you a question. If you don't commit to him, there's only one reason. You think committing is going to mean more pain than not committing. Is that fair? She thought for a moment. She goes, well, I guess that's true. I said, how come? Where did you get that thing linked up in your head? And what turned out to be was that when she was growing up, she gave 100% in her mind to her family. She gave 100% in her mind to her parents. She loved them 100%. And she felt like here she was giving, 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 and was totally committed to loving them, but she didn't feel like they gave back. She felt unloved. She felt like they didn't reciprocate. And so as a result, she felt these tremendous feelings of loss. And that meant a lot of pain for her. So somewhere along the way, her brain linked up. If you commit and love somebody 100%, then what's going to happen is it's going to mean pain to you. She wasn't even aware of this consciously. But now all of a sudden, it was affecting her relationship with her husband, where they had drifted apart. They weren't spending time together. Part of it was just not feeling 100% committed, not being willing to give 100% of herself emotionally and physically and spiritually in being with her husband. So how do you help her to change her neuroassociation? What's step one? Do you remember? Get leverage. So I had to help her get to the point where she believed that she must change this pattern. So I said, well, let me ask you a question. I didn't tell her she must change it, by the way. I got her to tell me. I said, if you don't change this pattern, if you still don't commit to your husband, how will it affect your relationship over the next 3, 4, 5 years? Well, she thought for a moment or two, and she said, well, I think it would mean divorce. I said, how come? She said, well, if I'm not committed to him, if I don't love him 100%, he's got to feel that. And if he doesn't feel loved at 100%, then he probably won't give me 100%, and then I won't feel loved, and then that'll make me mad, and that'll just generate all kinds of problems. I said, isn't that what's already happening? And she said, yeah, it is. And so what I got her to do is begin to associate what? Pain to her present behavior, to her present pattern, so that she'd absolutely feel like it must change now. And we went more and more and more until she began to tell me she didn't do this, how what a lousy role model it would be for her children, and how even if she divorced him, no man would ever feel totally loved by her or would ever commit to her if she wasn't willing to commit. Till pretty soon there was so much pain associated with not changing, she felt like she had to. And I said, if you were to change, what would happen? And she said, well, gosh, you know, there's a good chance that if I did change, that he, in fact, would, you know, give all his love to me, too, and our relationship would get better and our home life would be better. And she went on and on and on with all the pleasure. I'd accomplished step one without a doubt. So now I had leverage with her. She knew she must change, but she still had that pattern, that fear that said, yeah, if I don't change, it's going to mean pain. But what if I commit and I give him 100%, but he doesn't love me back? What if I commit and I still don't get the love? What if I commit and I still get pain? And I said, well, let me help you out on this. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever driven a car? She said, what? And it just instantly interrupted her pattern. Here she was caught up in her fear that, God, if she commits, it would mean pain. I want to change that pattern. I want to interrupt it, and I want to create a new empowering pattern of association. So I said, have you ever driven a car? She said, well, yeah. I said, have you driven a car down a 2-lane highway that winds through the mountains where all that was separating you from the cars coming from the other direction was a little yellow line? She said, yeah. And I said, well, I got a question for you. Is it possible that even though you were committed to driving on your side of the line, that the people on the other side were not as committed? Is that possible? She said, well, yeah. I said, do you have any guarantee that just by your being committed to stay on your side of the line, that they're going to stay on theirs too? She said, well, no. I said, in fact, is it possible that you could experience a lot of pain driving a car like that? That the cars that are coming the other way, 55 miles an hour, might accidentally, even without meaning to hurt you, come on your side and crash and kill you instantly. Is that possible? She said, well, of course. I said, then I got a question for you. How could you possibly drive on a road like that? How could you possibly drive through the mountains knowing there are cars of people you don't even know who are coming down the highway at the opposite side when you don't even know they're committed? And then I smiled. She just said she didn't know her husband was committed to her. I said, how do you do that? How do you drive down a road and commit to your side not knowing what they're going to do? She said, well, you just got to trust. I said, oh. And I said, what happens if you don't trust? She said, well, then you can't get from here to there. Then you're trapped. I said, oh. And what she began to do was create a new association that she was trapping herself. I said, you mean you can't have what you want if you don't just trust and commit? She said, yeah, I hear you. I hear you. That's true. So what did I do? I interrupted her old pattern, and I simultaneously helped her to create a new one. And I said, let me ask you a question. What's the best way to receive love? She said, well, to give love. I said, well, when you're being totally loving, do you usually receive love even without trying? She said, oh, yeah. And I got her to associate that committing and giving love meant receiving tons of love. At the end of this point, I said, let me ask you a question. What if your husband doesn't commit to you? What if you give him 100% and he doesn't give back? She said, well, look, some man will appreciate it. And if I'm always giving, I'm going to have a man in my life who appreciates it. There's no doubt about it. And I said, so what are you committed to doing? She says, I'm committed to go give him 1,000%. Give him everything I got of myself. And if that scares him, I'll give him even more. If that scares him, I'll give him even more. And if he disappears and runs off, well, that's his loss. But I'm going to really go for it 100%. And she did. Simply by changing her associations, go through the three steps. Get leverage. Get where you must change. Two, interrupt the pattern. Three, create a new association that empowers you. Now, I could have gotten the same result using Gestalt therapy, rational emotive therapy, virtually any form of therapy, but I'll tell you what the key is. The key is the distinctions about leverage and interrupting people's patterns. That's the key to making the change. I mean, I'll give you an example. Recently, I heard on a late night on the news there was an advertisement for a television program. And on this morning television program, they said they were going to have an expert who does 5-minute phobia cures. Well, that's pretty much how I became famous. I got on television and basically eliminated people's phobias right there on camera. So I figured, hey, maybe it's one of my students. Or maybe it's one of the psychiatrists or psychologists I've trained. The next morning, I tuned in on the show, and it wasn't one of my own students. This guy had a totally different technique for eliminating phobias. And here's what it was. First of all, they brought this man on. He was a psychologist. And they brought him on, and they said, look, okay, he's going to eliminate this man's phobia. And the man came up, and he said, this man has a phobia to snakes. Sir, how do you feel about snakes? And the man said, not very good. I thought, well, major phobia. When I deal with people with a phobia, I look for somebody who's out of control, you know, somebody who's screaming and that stuff. I thought he didn't exactly pick a real challenging subject, but okay, here we go. So then he's going to test it. So I figured, you know, what I've done on a regular basis is go out and I grab a real snake and just scare the heck out of somebody and see that it really works. And then I test it afterwards to see if it works by handing them the snake and having them wrap it around their body. In fact, I did it with a giant boa constrictor on a couple of television shows that when I first saw the boa constrictor, I had to work on my neuroassociations. But anyway, the bottom line is this guy brings out a plastic snake. And he brings a snake and he pushes in front of the guy and goes, ruh. The guy looks and goes, oh. And I thought, all right, well, let's see what he's going to do. So sure enough, this is on national television. Sure enough, the guy reaches out and he goes, what I'm going to do with this man is a technique called temporal tapping. What he does is he has the man stand there and he says, okay, sir, I want you to think about snakes. And he takes his fingers and he starts smacking this guy on the side of his head on his temples. He goes, wham, 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 think about snakes. Wham, 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 think about snakes. Wham, 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 think about snakes. Wham, wham, wham. Well, after doing this about 5 or 6 times, the guy goes, do you feel any different? The man goes, yeah, my head hurts. He said, but do you feel any different about snakes? He goes, well, I don't think so. He goes, all right, think about snakes. Wham, 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 think about snakes. Wham, wham, wham. And what is this man doing if it works? He's interrupting this man's pattern of association in his nervous system. Are you following me? In other words, this man used to think of snakes and get this unbelievable painful fear feeling in his gut. Now instead, he's got this pain in his head. Now that may not sound like much, but it is a change and it will take him out of fear. Well, the guy did it over and over again and it didn't work. All of a sudden, this psychologist breaks out into this massive sweat on national television. He's having a pain called failure on national TV. And all of a sudden, my heart goes out to him. I thought, nobody wants to be in this situation, right? They say, all right, we're going to cut to a commercial, and then we'll come back. And meanwhile, he's still going, think about the snakes, wham, wham, wham. Think about the snakes, wham, wham, wham. Well, when they come back from the commercial, we don't see the man with a snake phobia, and there's no mention of what happened. Instead, there's a new woman here, and she has a phobia to ladders. And so he says, okay, now think about ladders, wham, 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 think about ladders, wham, 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 think about ladders, wham, wham, wham. And he keeps doing this over and over again. He says, do you feel any different? She goes, well, yeah. He goes, now, and you could see she did feel different. She didn't look scared. Think about ladders, wham, wham, wham. After 3 or 4 minutes or 5 minutes of this, maybe a little bit more, they finally bring out this ladder and they ask her to climb up it. Well, she walks over, she goes, yeah, I think I can do it. I feel different. She takes a step on the first step, then the second step, then about the third step, and she kind of gets a little scared, but she kind of stays on the third step, and then she comes on down. Well, the audience claps like crazy, and the host of the show comes over and says, hey, that was really great. Boy, you must really be proud of yourself. She goes, yeah, I'm not only proud, I'm excited. Because you know what? My husband said that if this therapist guy could help me, and I could get up at least 3 stairs, that he'd give me a shopping spree, and he would paint the whole house. Interesting. She walked in with leverage. It was a must for her, because for her, being able to do this meant she could have lots of pleasure and get out of some pain. Pretty hot deal. So no wonder step one was handled, so all this man had to do was step two, and step three fell into place. And the problem is, when you go to a therapist and it doesn't happen, it's because they don't have leverage on you, or they haven't interrupted your pattern, or you haven't created a new pattern. So just go through those steps for yourself, and you probably don't need a therapist 99.9% of the time, and I think most therapists would agree with me on this. What's interesting about this story, though, is the host turned back to this guy, and they had like 3 minutes left in the show. And he said, well, 1 out of 2 sure isn't bad. That's a pretty good deal. But why don't you go here and work with John some more, because we didn't get the result with him. Let's see if you can pull it off. And he goes, no, no, no. He says, I think John's problem is that he's sick, and you know, he's probably got a virus, so that when I'm doing this, it's affecting his way his body is processing this. And John says, I don't got a virus. And he says, well, you know, he may not know it, but he probably has one. John says, no, no, no. The host says, well, come on over. Why don't you go ahead and work on him anyway? And the guy goes, well, all right. And he gets up there and wham, wham, wham. Think about snakes. Wham, wham, wham. Think about snakes. Wham, wham. Nothing works, right? Finally, at the end, right, the guy's sweating like crazy. And he said, you know, I think I could help him in private. I think he's just uncomfortable because all these people are watching him. And the guy goes, I'm not uncomfortable. I thought, this poor therapist, he's getting beat up here, right? He's going to have a phobia to going on TV shows after this. But the bottom line is, finally, right, the show's about to end. And this gentleman who had the phobia says, you know, I think the only reason I'm not changing is I don't really want to. I thought, what better example that leverage was missing? So those are the 3 keys to neuroassociative conditioning. Use them well, and you can make any change you want in your life because you understand the key elements that will make the change happen now, not 6 months from now or a year from now. And I want you to know, I know there's a lot to absorb here, so you might want to listen to it again. And each of these 3 steps we'll be using over and over again over the 30-day period here. So you'll get used to them, and you'll get a lot more examples, for example, on how to interrupt people's patterns, how to interrupt your own patterns, fear patterns, if you will, sabotage patterns. In fact, we have some specific tapes during these 30 days that are only on how to interrupt those patterns and make the changes. So take heart.